This is a podcast from Minute Media.
In the fall each year we all congregate, the bound all gathered at the church of tailgate. The scriptures reading from the book of Munson, our favorite verse, my God, a freshman. Drunk and obnoxious, we'll choose your fate. Ain't nothing finer in the land. Now the 3,000 of our best friends, it's Saturday and last thing.
Welcome to the Saturday Night Podcast for a Georgia Bulldogs show by dogs fans for dogs fans. I'm your host, Herschel Gurley, joined as always by my co-host, Boss Dog. And Boss, we're 9-0, number one in all the land, about to head to Knoxville to face the hated Vols. And, you know, we're back for another week. And main reason we do this is so we can not only talk dogs, but also interact with other dogs fans. So like we've said a couple times, we kind of want this to be like a neighborhood dogs bar. So if you guys are listening and you like the show, go ahead and go on Apple and rate us, subscribe to the show, leave a review for us, shoot us an email and let us know what you like about the show, what you don't like. If you're on social, go ahead and give us a follow on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. We just want to interact with as many of you as possible and talk as much dogs as possible. So, go ahead and do that for us, and we'll look forward to barking with y'all as we continue this road to Indy. And on that note, Boss, big win over Mizzou, not a cover of that massive spread. And I texted with you, the only thing that kept it from being a cover was the inability to cover up the blocked punt in the end zone. If we had those five extra points, home, we would have had a cover on our hands, but it wasn't to be.
It was still a dominating performance, even without the cover. I mean, the game was never really in doubt, even when it looked a little sluggish there in the beginning. And let's talk about Nolan Smith for a second there. He clearly could have covered that punt. He was being very selfless. It looked like he held up to try to give Dan Jackson the cover there for the touchdown. So yeah, great play. And has he ever had a more dominant stretch in his career than the last 2.5 games? He has looked like the number one player that everyone thought he was going to be coming out of high school. He has looked amazing.
Yes, he has been a difference maker. I mean, it's very, very evident where he is on the field the last, you know, really 4 to 5 weeks, I think. I mean, he has really asserted himself. And this is another thing about this team, man. I mean, you talk about him being selfless. Dude, Nolan Smith, one of the best players on the team. He's on punt block team, you know, like, I think that's one of the special things about this group. And I think it's one of the special things when you have excellent football teams in general is the propensity for key guys on the team to want to be a part of special teams. And that's absolutely the case on this team. And really, man, I think that's been kind of an undersold narrative of this 2021 team is how impactful the special teams has been. What was that? The second or third block punt? Second. And then what? There's been 3 field goals / extra point blocks, maybe more, 3 or 4?
Yes. Three. Pretty sure it's 3.
I mean, homie, that's a lot of block kicks, especially for a Georgia team. I feel like when's the last time you could say there were 6 block kicks in a season, much less through the first 9 games?
I don't know. That's a stat we need to look up. So I don't remember ever remembering there being this many block kicks in a season.
Oh, man. And like, there's been a bunch where they were right there. They almost blocked a couple more on Saturday. I mean, the schemes look good. Obviously, high energy, high effort on all those teams. And I think that's a product of the team leadership. I just, you know, it's got guys that are impact players that want to make an impact in that phase of the game, too. And it has showed all season long. Yeah, I mean, I thought it was another good game for Trayvon Walker, too. He's really, really starting to emerge, I think.
He's looked really good, and it's really almost made me a little nervous because beginning of the season and even through, I mean, really through game 5, there was really no doubt in my mind that he was coming back next year. But the way he's looked the last 3 games, it's like, I'm not so sure he may go the way he's looked and the way he's flashed the last, he's putting some really good film out there. That's really making me a little nervous that he may go pro now. But I mean, I'm still hoping he comes back, but he's any dog that goes pro and has a chance to make money. Never going to, they don't, but you know, being greedy, want him to come back and play a senior year.
Did you see the tweet on Saturday? And I cannot remember who it was from. I'll have to go look because we should put it in the show notes. But somebody tweeted either from their vantage point on the field or from their vantage point in the press box, there was a group or maybe a few NFL scouts near him. And he overheard them say, I wish the whole damn defense was draftable. And like, I just thought that kind of spoke to where this unit is at. Is they're just at a level, you know, D-line, linebacker, secondary, and pretty much across the board from a player perspective, they're just excellent. I mean, they have been excellent. So I thought that was quite the commentary from a third-party outsider to be like, yeah, could we just draft the whole defense? And let's be honest, they didn't exactly come out on fire, I would say, on Saturday. I thought they looked a little, I don't know. I think we're just so used to seeing them be excellent that anything less than that, it kind of looks like they're not ready or something of that nature, right? And so I thought it was one of the slower starts, but I also don't know how much that's attributable to just how spoiled we've been this year with how elite they've been from start to finish, right? Like, we're talking about another game where they only allowed 6 points to an opponent. And yes, Mizzou stinks, but their offense doesn't stink. I mean, their defense is atrocious, but their offense is not. And I know they had to play their backup quarterbacks, blah, blah, blah. But dude, this is becoming an opponent independent thing. Like, people just don't score on Georgia's defense. I don't know. It's just been bananas to kind of take this in and watch it. And I feel like we're beating a dead horse because we say it every week, but I really, really hope that people are breathing this in and appreciating it for what it is and appreciating it for how unique and one of a kind it is. Like, this is a historic defense you're getting to watch. And really, by the end of the year, it's probably going to be a historic team that you're watching. So, like, yeah, man, live it up. Enjoy this damn thing.
We have become spoiled. The fact that as much as we nitpick, and by we, I mean we as Georgia fans, as the Georgia fan base. And this goes back to what we talked about at the beginning of the year, that no matter what, Georgia fans are not happy about anything. It's very aggravating. And we nitpick this defense. We nitpick the offense. We find stuff to be miserable about. It's very, very frustrating as a fan of this team and as someone who covers the team to witness and to see. Just, we can't be happy no matter what. We got to find something to bitch about, for lack of a better term.
I will say this. I thought the tenor on social media was a little milder this week following the Braves World Series title. Like, it's almost like people took a breath a little bit and kind of unclenched and were like, okay, let's kind of live in the joy that this week has been. Because it seemed like a very celebratory day, I thought, with Blooper being there, with Jock Peterson being there, and honoring Coach Rick and honoring Lauren Smith. Like, it seemed a very celebratory atmosphere at the stadium, and that seemed to kind of translate to people's watching experience via social. But yes, I think in general, that is absolutely correct. And I'm interested to see as we move forward, if that changes. And look, man, I think some of this is just hand wringing because now we're on the march to Atlanta. We're on the march to what's the next big domino to fall. I mean, we'll talk about Tennessee when we preview that later in the week. But, like, that's pretty much the last real domino that has to fall before Atlanta. And how big a domino that is, I think, is very debatable. But, you know, I think people are anxious about what's going to happen when they play the eventual SEC West champion, which, after last weekend, looks as up in the air as ever. Right, homie? I mean,
yeah.
You know, I think you and I both would have cashed in a couple weeks ago that it was going to be Georgia, Alabama in the bends. But I don't know, man. They still got to play Arkansas. They still got to play Auburn. Who knows what could happen? I mean, I'm not super sold on them right now. Let me ask you this. Speaking on that point, because I was thinking about this last night, because I can tell you where I'm at with it. I want it to be Bama. Like, I almost need it to be Bama. I feel like that is a, whatever you want to call it, psychological, emotional hurdle that I think the program needs to leap across. And I'm not saying it would diminish anything for me, because whoever they play, if they're SEC champs, I'm going to live in that joy and love it. And same thing on the playoff path. If Alabama's not in those cards, it is what it is. But I will say this. It would have a different level of satisfaction if they're one of the foes on the road of conquest. Do you agree with that, or do you think I'm being crazy about that?
If you were to ask me this the beginning of the season, and we probably talked about in the offseason, I would have 100% agreed with you. But as we've gone through this season and watched this Bama team, I don't feel it. This Bama team doesn't look like Bama. They just don't. Like, they're wearing the uniforms. Nick Saban's still on the sideline, but they don't look like Bama to me. They don't have a game changer on offense. They look lackluster on defense. Honestly, they look like us from the last couple of years. I hate to say it. That's what it looks like.
But here's my point. I don't care how they look this year. What I'm saying is, I think symbolically for the program, it would be more beneficial, not just this year, but in the long run, for it to be them that we beat in Atlanta. For me. Because, dude, there's a lot of skeletons in that closet. And, like, I think it's a lot of ghosts that could be vanquished, and a lot of, I don't even know if confidence is the right word, but I think it would steal the psychology of Dog Nation in the fact that, yeah, they got beat. We beat them. I don't care what version of them they are. Beating them is still beating them. And I think it's meaningful. And that's my point with it. Like, I want it to be them because I want to beat them. I really don't care what they look like or what version of them it is. I just want to beat their ass.
There's two sides to this coin for me. Okay. And one we won't know until January. So, if it's Bama in Atlanta, two scenarios play out. We win the national championship. It doesn't matter. That doesn't matter, because once Kirby wins one, the dynasty foundation's built and everyone's chasing Georgia at that point, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's fair.
If Georgia does not, like, my fear is, I guess this is multiple scenarios in my head that just popped in. So my fear is, the scenario that I don't want to play out is Bama doesn't make it. We win the SEC championship, we get in the playoffs, and we don't win the national championship, because then Bama's still there. That's the scenario. That's the worst case scenario that I can see. Like, if we still beat Bama in the SEC championship, like, I don't want to see us win the national championship, but if we don't end up in Indy and don't win, then we still vanquish the demon, so to speak. Do you see where I'm going with this? Like, that's my concern. But I feel like that concern of leaving the dragon, sleeping dragon, still there. I do have a fear of that, but not if we win. If we end up winning at all, I don't care who it is.
What I'm saying is, for me, I think beating them in the SEC title, I almost think it automatically makes them the national champion. And I'll tell you why. I think that's a psychological barrier that once they remove it, they'll be unstoppable. I mean, there's not a team talent-wise, and this isn't biased Georgia fans saying this. This is just a fact. If you've got two eyes and a brain, they are the most talented team in college football, and it's not close. So the only thing that's going to keep them from raising a trophy in Indy is something they do to themselves, right? Like, some type of self-inflicted loss. Because up and down a roster, there's nobody talent-wise that should beat them. I don't care who it is, Alabama included. But what I'm saying is, the mental piece of it matters. And I think getting through that, that's one mountain to hit, right? I think there's two peaks on their national championship mountain. I think one is ascending Bama, and then the other is ascending to the national championship. If those things end up being one and the same, fine. I mean, I don't think they will be. I think if we beat Bama in the SEC title game, their road is done. I don't think they can get in as a two-loss team, even if – I mean, maybe they could if a lot of things went wrong. But the only scenario I can see that playing out that way is if Bama was the four. And I don't think they're going to have Bama and Georgia play one versus four right after they've played each other in the SEC title game. I don't foresee that happening. So I think it's a one bite at the apple thing for Alabama. If they don't win the SEC title, they're out. I just think that's the long and short of it. I don't care what kind of game it is. I know a lot of people have said, well, what if it's a close game? I just don't think it matters. I think they're out if Georgia beats them.
I mean, and let's be honest, the way that they're playing right now, I want to play Bama in the SEC championship game. If I have my choice of the team, the options, give me Bama over A&M, the way A&M's defense is playing.
Well, I'll be honest with you. Don't let them scare me. I mean, the West.
Neither one of them do. But I mean, if I have to choose one of the two, like A&M's defense is much better than Bama's, in my opinion. Their defense has a lot of dudes. Bama's has Will Anderson, and that's it.
Dude, I don't think the issue is as much with Bama's defense. I just think they're more mortal along the offensive line than they've been in a long time. And I think that was pretty evident on Saturday. I mean, dude, that LSU team is not a very good football team. And they had a slug it out 20-14 win against LSU at home. Like, I don't know. I've just been very underwhelmed with what they do along both lines. Offensive and defensive. Will Anderson's a game changer, though. I mean, that dude is a freak. So, and I just feel like, too, they're always going to have a little gravitas about it. So, it's different than playing an A&M. Like, the A&M thing, they're going to be like a deer in headlights playing in Atlanta. You know what I mean? Like, it's not – Jimbo's been in those stages before, but A&M hasn't for a long time, brother. I mean, when's the last time they played in the title game? They're still in the Big 12.
Yeah, that's fair.
And even then, it had been a while. So I just, that's what I mean. I think the exposure to the stage matters. So I don't know. We're kind of getting on a tangent, but that's, it matters to me. I want to beat Bama on the way to Indy. I do. Like, it will make the juice a whole lot sweeter for me. Look, at the end of the day, I don't care. I just want them to win the title. So, it's opponent independent. I'm just telling you, it'll be a much sweeter bite of the apple if Alabama's one of the people that they stomp on the road. That's it. Because, dude, it's a lot of pain involved with that, right? Like 12, yeah. 17, 18. I don't know, man. It's just a lot.
Don't forget the ass whippings, too. Don't forget 08. Don't forget, yeah. You know, 15.
15.
I mean, there were a lot of beatdowns in there too. They weren't the gut punches, but they didn't feel good either.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, that's what I mean. There's a lot of demons there, and I just want to see it happen. I really, really want to see it happen. So I want to talk to you about this just because it's been one of the things people complained about, and I'm not that neither here nor there about it because my thing is, did they score 43 points? Why are we pissing and moaning about this, but been a lot of hand wringing about the running game. Mizzou got the worst rush defense in all the SEC. I think maybe all of the country. I think they're 130th in the nation out of 130 teams in rush defense.
They actually moved up before the Georgia game. I think they were 124th before, so they weren't dead last, but they were close.
So obviously not a, I would say, stupendous rushing performance, but also wasn't like Missouri is forcing Georgia off the field with three and outs, right? So I don't know. Do you think that's much ado about nothing, or do you think this actual legitimate area of concern? I mean, you know, Jamari Salyer's not in there. So new unit of five playing together for the first time. Coach Smart said in his press conference today, he thinks Jamari might have an outside shot to play this Saturday. I don't know. I'm just always interested in your opinion on that. Cause for me, I'm always just end result. Like, the offense scored 43 points or 41 if you don't count the safety. So, whatever. They look fine to me.
The offensive line running the ball has looked ho-hum all season. And part of that has been with Stetson at quarterback, or with even with JT at quarterback, the most defensive coordinators have been like, we're going to make Georgia beat us passing the ball because of the depleted wide receiver core of then when Stetson took over. That's just been the philosophy. So they're going to put 7-8 guys in the box. They're going to sneak a safety down. They're going to bring a corner in. They're going to do that. The difference is a lot of times we wear teams down. And for some reason on Saturday, we did not do that. Every other game, we've been able to wear the team down. By the fourth quarter, we were able to bust one. Kyrus was the only one who busted one, and that wasn't a traditional run play. That was a jet sweep. So, but every other game, you know, Zeus busted one, or we had like, you know, we started getting instead of those 1 to 2 yard runs, we started getting, you know, 8 to 10 yard runs in the late in the third, early fourth quarter. We didn't get those on Saturday. So that's one thing. The other thing is, and I do not want to turn this into a quarterback debate, but, and I didn't really notice it that much earlier in the year because I wasn't paying that much attention to it, but I noticed it on Saturday. And this maybe was because JT was back in the game for the first time in a long time. Stetson doesn't really make checks at the line.
Yeah.
And I mean, you're a former quarterback, so maybe you can attest this. Has it been like that all year? And I just never noticed it.
Yeah, I have noticed on a few occasions where, and it's interesting, you notice it more on running plays than you do on pass plays.
Yeah, exactly.
Because normally, I think the value of a quarterback, which I don't think gets written about a lot, is their ability to check in a run play to either shift protection or let's flip it or what are we going to do because we want to go away from the blitz or whatever it may be. They run into blitzes a lot. And
yes,
that's a quarterback thing to me. I think that's one of those things where you got to recognize that and you got to shift that. And I think that's some of the value that JT provides. He's very, very good pre-snap.
The lad touchdown was, I think, a run play originally. Yeah. And he checked out of it. And because if you look the way the line blocks, they block run.
Correct. That's correct. Yes.
So I think that was a run play that he changed.
I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right. Yeah. And, you know, my thing,
I mean, there's hand-wringing, and I don't want to hand-wring over quarterbacks.
Well, and this is what I was gonna say too, is dude, we're not in the room. We don't know what they're asking you to do, right? They may not be asking them to make those checks. So they may just go, look, just go where we tell you to go. Or I just don't know. Right. But yes, I have noticed in multiple games that we run into a lot of blitzes, which to me signals that we should have checked out of that at the line. But again, I'm not in the game plan room. I don't know what they're instructing or what they're saying. Now, flip that. I do want to talk about this because I thought this was really telling on Saturday. I think it's been kind of climbing the ladder, but it really showed Saturday. Wide receiver group's getting healthy, homie. Like. Yeah. I thought Jermaine looked healthy. I thought Arian looked healthy. And give Stetson credit, man, that fourth down throw to Arian, he threw that not like at the break, like Arian hadn't even thought about making the break yet.
Yeah, and that was a dime.
It was a dime. Beautiful ball. And he understood his weapon, right? He knew I can put it back there and Arian can go get it because he's, you know, one of the fastest dudes in college football. So I thought that was a real instinctual play. You can't coach that. That just is what it is. So I thought that was great. Dude, it was a fourth down play. I mean, that's a big nuts throw. So yeah. I thought that was a great play. Jermaine Burton saved his ass multiple times. Dude, that throw that he made that was the, you know, Jermaine's first quote-unquote touchdown that got overturned and it was like at the one-yard line.
Yeah.
That ball should have been picked.
Yeah.
That was just a beautiful effort play by Jermaine, and that's what he does, man. When he is healthy. And look, man, you know, I was interested today. I did some research on it. You know, he's third on the team in receiving touchdowns. And I feel like he hasn't played all year. And he's third on the team in receiving yards. So, like,
that's crazy.
I was shocked by both of those things. Yeah, he's only behind Ladd and Brock. That's it. Which would you have told, if I hadn't told you that, would you have guessed that he was the third?
No, I'd have no idea. I had no idea of that.
I just feel like he hasn't even played all year. That's what I mean, though. If he gets back healthy and Arian stays healthy, and we talked about it last week after Florida, I think Kiaris is healthy. He had a nice run on his jet sweep. Like, I mean, I don't know, man. They are, and look, dude, Dom and George aren't even playing. Like that, the healthier that room gets, the scarier that offense gets to me. So that's why I just am not, super tense about the offense. Like I feel like a lot of the fan base is. I just feel like they are full of weapons. And dude, can we talk too about Monken and the play calling, and notably his goal line play calling? And you know how your boy loves the Jalen Carter, Jordan Davis jumbo package, but I more want to talk about them shifting into the wild dog and James Cook just walking in untouched. Like, I feel like Coach Monken does an incredible job of varying looks for opposing defenses to prepare for. So yeah, I don't know, man. I just think that, I think Coach Monken is not getting nearly the credit and praise that he should be from the nationwide pundits, because the defense has been what it's been. But Todd Monken has done an excellent job all season.
And I don't think he's using the majority of his playbook. Maybe.
Yeah.
And if he is, he's not using 70% of it, maybe using 60. Like I think there's so much that he hasn't needed to use. Because the defense has been so dominant. So if we get in a pickle, oh man, I can't wait to see what I don't want to be in a pickle, but if we get in a pickle, I can't wait to see what he pulls out. When I was in Jacksonville at the Florida game, the plays that Stetson missed, there were multiple people running wide open. Yeah. On Saturday, there were multiple people running wide open all game. And Stetson could pick and choose. So it's just every game there's people running wide open. And the same thing was last year too. People were running wide open every game.
Yeah.
You just couldn't get the ball there every time. So Monken schemes some great, great plays. I mean, the way we talk about Sark is the way we should be talking about Monken.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that.
But we don't have the stats guys, because that's not the style of football that Georgia runs. So we're not going to have, you know, a 1,000-yard receiver, or we're not going to have, you know, someone who gets 13 touchdowns, or a quarterback that throws, you know, 40 touchdowns. So that's why he doesn't get them that much pub, because we don't play an exciting brand of football outside of Georgia.
Dude, don't you think though? Like, have you envisioned what that offense could look like with Brock at quarterback? With what he's able to do with his legs and his arms. And like, even Gunner, I feel like with the way they scheme things, and man, if they kind of went NASCAR and went hurry up and like really push tempo and stuff, boy, I really, really, really think they could put up some points on me. I mean, they are putting up points. And I think for this year's team, like personality wise, they don't need to do that, right? Like, what's the benefit of them scoring a point a minute or whatever it may be, right? They don't need to do that. It behooves them to chew clock, let that defense rest, and then just go wild when they're on the field, right? Fully rested and roll full speed.
Yeah.
So I think there's some balance there, because one of the flips to having a high scoring offense is, and especially if you score quick, dude, your defense ends up being on the field a lot, which then changes the motor they're able to play with. So I do think there's a happy medium there, but in a vacuum, man, like if you think about what that offense could look like with the way Brock plays, with his tools, with the way Gunner plays, with his skill set, that offense could be bananas. And, you know, let's not, you know, forget that Ladd's a freshman. Brock's a freshman. You know, there's going to be so many weapons there. Darnell's an underclassman. Like, there's all these guys that are going to be back next year from an offensive perspective. Kendall's AD. Back. Kenny's AD. Back. AD's back. I mean, like, dude, it's a whole lot of weapons. So, the benefit, and we've talked about this offline, but one of the nice things about Coach Monken not getting a lot of national shine is hopefully ain't nobody going to come calling for vacant coaching positions, right? Like,
yeah.
Hopefully he keeps his ass in Athens, because that'd be good for all of us. But yeah, I mean, it's just been, for me, fun to watch. It's been a fun offense to watch, and it's been fun to watch the game plans week to week. So I'm interested, and I agree with you. I don't think they're using remotely close to the full array of that playbook. Like, I don't even think he's gone forearm deep into that bag yet. You know what I mean? So, yeah, I think if they had to dial up some stuff, it could get really cool to watch. So that'll be something to kind of track as they get into Atlanta and then the playoff run and all that, is to see what that offense kind of looks like if they want to get exotic and do some fun stuff. So I don't know. What else stuck out to you on Saturday? I'm probably forgetting some stuff because we've been on two tangents now, but just another dominating performance.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, the quarterbacks get nitpicked to death. Like you said, Jermaine saves Stetson, but to me, it wasn't those passes. Those were 50-50 balls. You know, yeah. we have those built into our game plan. Yep. So we either want those to be caught or incomplete pass. We don't want those to be intercepted. Those weren't the plays that bothered me on Saturday with Stetson. The play that bothered me was the pass to Marcus on the sideline. That should have been a pick six.
Man, heck of a catch by Marcus, too. You talk about strong hands on me.
No kidding. That bothered me. I don't know what he saw there, but that's neither here nor there. I mean, JT, first time he played since end of September, he looked like he hasn't played in over a month. So, yeah.
Well, I didn't really... In fairness, too, I thought the only one that he missed that was pretty egregious was the pick. And yeah, it was a tip ball, so it's kind of an unfortunate pick. But, dude, if he throws that where he's supposed to throw it, that might have been a touchdown. I think Jermaine just goes up the seam and scores a touchdown. I mean, that was a bad ball. But I think that's a speed thing. I don't think there's any way to simulate game speed. So you got to do it. You know, you just got to go play. But, hey, man, this is a great problem to have, okay? You got two guys that are very, very capable. And I think they do have some options as JT gets back into kind of game speed. For a look, if the game plan is better served by having a more traditional pocket passer that needs to make run checks and stuff, a la the Clemson game, like, tell me this, don't you think the Clemson game would look different offensively if Stetson played quarterback?
Yeah.
Yeah. I just think, dude, JT makes a lot of checks, a lot of reads that I feel like the normal fan doesn't see, but probably keep you in a safe spot from a team perspective. So, man, I'm happy to have both of them. And Stetson has played great. I do think that has gotten diminished a little bit in the larger narrative. Like, Stetson has played very well, and he should get credit for that. Like, and his teammates obviously love him. Like, multiple ones have gone to bat for him. They're all very joyful. Did you see him get so fired up when JT threw the touchdown pass? Like, that's what I love. Is that both of them are on each other's team, you know, like, and I don't think that's a lip service thing. Like, you can just tell those dudes are working for each other. And I just love it. I love this freaking team.
That's why I don't understand why Georgia fans can't just be happy and enjoy the ride. When was the last time that we had this much fun in a year?
17.
I gotta, but was 17 this much fun?
It was different.
I don't remember feeling this much, having this much fun in 17.
17 was different because 17 was more like a magic carpet ride where you kept waiting for the genie to go back in the bottle and the carpet to fall apart, like in Aladdin. Like, that's kind of what 17 was like, because it wasn't supposed
to be. But 17 wasn't as dominant, though. 17 wasn't as dominant.
That's what I mean. It felt like a magic ride. It didn't feel like it was based in reality. Whereas this, dude, this feels real. Like, this feels like, oh, yeah. Like, it's not just us saying we're watching the best team in the country. It's everybody with a set of eyeballs saying, yeah, that's the best team in the country. Ain't nobody beating their ass. And, dude, it's fun, man. That's why I'm trying to, like, breathe it in. And, dude, it's not just fun in that way that they're the best team and everybody acknowledges they're the best team. This defense is – I've never seen anything like it. Like, not as a fan of my own teams anyways. And you really got to start looking back through history to think about when you've seen it in the college landscape. Like, what? Bama 11? That defense was historic. You got to go back to the 90s and talk about some of those Florida State defenses, some of the Alabama defenses from the 70s and 80s. Like, historic defense that we're watching. It's awesome. And it all started in Charlotte.
And on top of that, you got to look at it from the perspective of we're in a different age of football.
Yeah.
Where 100%. It benefits the offenses.
100%. You know, they always 100% true.
They always say with holding, you know, I mean, John Madden used to always say you could call holding on every play, which you can. But they always say that you're not supposed to call holding if the holding is like in between, you know, if the arms aren't extended or anything like that. Every single play, one of our D tackles, Jordan Davis, Jalen Carter, Devontae Wyatt, somebody is being held with the arms extended and it's never called. And we're dominating people and getting to the quarterback and stuffing people at the line of scrimmage. It is egregious with the non-holding calls and we're still dominating people.
I think the other piece of it, that's a very valid point. This is a different age and they're doing what people said you couldn't do anymore, which is dominate and win games with incredible defense. So I think that's awesome. The other piece of this is the intangible of how this team is with each other, how they interact with each other, how they make the fan base feel because of what you're getting to watch, right? Like, they're just a fun group to root for because you can tell they love each other and it's hard not to love them because of that. And I think that stems from the big personalities on the team. I think Jordan and Nolan and even like Chris Smith and Lewis Seen, like and Nakobe, there's just a lot of really vibrant team first personalities. And man, it's just making for a lot of magic, I think. And you can't really value that or quantify it, but it's real, man. Like I feel every week I watch them. I'm like so excited to see them just because you want to watch them be joyful for that 3 hours that you watch them play. So yeah, man, it's been a hell of a fall and I'm freaking so excited for the rest of it.
Couldn't have said it better.
All right, homie. Well, we got Tennessee this week going to Knoxville. We're going to have newly minted Knoxville resident and former Georgia tight end Arthur Lynch come on and preview the Vols game with us this week. So we'll have that coming up for you. And if you haven't already, make sure and go check out the Sunday Snaps episodes with two of our favorite guys on the whole Georgia football team, long snappers Payne Walker and William Moat, two great guys. Both were kind enough to come on and share their stories with us. So as we tell y'all every week, know your snappers. Make sure and go and support them, go follow them on social and make sure and pick them out on the field each Saturday and root for them. 47 and 56. So that's our guys. Yeah, man. Until next time, go Dogs, sick 'em.
Go Dogs.
Hey, Georgia's better now.